Today's Daf in Masechet Shabbat, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, is Daf Tzadi Chet. We're holding right there, one line up from the bottom of Tzadi Zayin Amud Beit. Tana Rabbana. Hazorek Mirshut HaRabim, Lirshut HaRabim, Virshut HaYachid Be'emtza, Arba Amot Chayav. Fascinating issue. Because this gets to the very roots of the question of what is Arba Amos in Rishus HaRabim. Now, what we're saying over here is that if you threw two Amot in the Rishus HaRabim, at that point, you crossed over Rishus HaYochid. And then it went over the yard into the Rishus HaRabim on the other side. It went another two Amot in the other Rishus HaRabim. The halacha is over there, you would be chayev, because we put together the two Rishus HaRabims. But if it went less than Arba Amot, you would be putter. Now, obviously, if we're saying we would be putter, what we're saying is that passing over the Rishut HaYachid, and remember yesterday we had the discussion about passing through a ball, passing through one window, through the living room, out through the other window, and over there, even though Rebbe said you'd be chayev, because you'd be chayev as if it landed in the house, and then if it was ochre from the house, again, to get into the other side, and therefore you'd be chayev on hotzah and hachnasah. This is not talking about a case where the house is covered. It's talking about where there's a rishus hayochid, which is somebody's yard, never went through his living room. In that case, remember we said yesterday, there's a difference between a rishut hayochid mikura, where over there, if it's covered, then ein hachinami, it's considered to be beta keman demalia damya. That was another munach, by the way, which I forgot to tell you to write down. Please write that down. Beta keman demalia damya. If you have a home, namely an area that's covered, it is a new level of kluta kamisha uncha, because it's considered to be going through a gel in the house, and it's sitting in the house. In this case, we don't have that. And therefore, we're left to the standard kluta kibishun chadamya. The Tana of this braita, who is saying that you would be putter on the fact that the ball went over the other guy's yard and then out the other side to Rishus HaRabim, doesn't concern me. Why? It never landed in Rishus HaYochid. Because I don't hold a kluta kibishun chadamya. The only thing that I do worry about is, can I add the two amot on one side of the yard to the two amot that came out on the other side of the yard and put it together and say that I did sof transfer arba amot in Rishus HaRabim? Now, Rabbi Yossi said before, as Rashi points out over here, that you would not be chayev in such a case because it's two separate rishuyot. And therefore, the chiddush over here is that we don't say that. So what is the chiddush? First of all, hakamashman rishuyot mitztarfot, two amot plus two amot add to four. And furthermore, that we do not say kluta kamo shehun chadamya if there's no roof over the Rishut HaYachid, according to this Tana. Now let's consider the broader implications for the concept of Mavir Arba Amos Rishus HaRabim. There's two ways to understand that. Earlier, the Gemara asked why the idea of Mavir Arba Amos Rishus HaRabim is considered to be the equivalent of being Mavir Mirushus Rishus. And we said, Kol Arba Amot Rishut L'atzmohu. So what that would mean is, wherever a person happens to be standing, if you recall, we spoke about this being similar to personal space in an elevator, that there's an area, this is very nogea, kinyonim as well, but Tok Arba Amot of the person, he is able to be kine, if it's a tzide Rishus HaRabim. So the question over here is, does that mean that the Rishus HaRabim is essentially some type of universal space, which is personalized by where you happen to be standing in it? And therefore, the only thing that we need to think about is, was there a total change of coordinates in universal space of Arba Amos? That's one way to look at it. If that would be the case, then the fact that there is Rishus HaYochid intervening between this part of the universal space and that part of the universal space is irrelevant because it's not part of the universal space. That's precisely why it's called a Rishus HaYochid. So vis-a-vis the Rishus HaRabim, the Rishus HaYochid is not part of our considerations of space at all. And therefore, it's still able to be Mitzurif. This is the way our Shita holds. But according to Rabbi Yossi, we're not talking about some type of universal space. On the contrary, we're talking specifically about a personal space. It's not that the personal space tells us when to start and when to end as an arbitrary definition of a universal space, in which case every Rishus or Rabbim, you'd have to start over again. I mean, it's ridiculous to say my personal space includes two amas on this side of the house, of this guy's house, and two amas on the other side of the house. But that's laughable. In which case, we have a very big difference here between Rabbi Yossi Shita and our Braisa Shita. And that leads to the next question. We're talking about the difference between having a roof over Rishus HaYochid, which we said yesterday creates a sort of ether-like effect within the house. And it's interesting that the Mefarshim actually call it ether because they talk about the Havla. And the Havla, of course, is like the gas and the additional pressure within the house, which is similar to the way people took the concept of ether originally. I mean, obviously, it didn't really have any pressure, but okay. And the question is, from an entirely different point of view, and it's interesting because it has absolutely nothing to do with the issue of the Rishus HaYochid, what would be the din of a roof over a Rishus HaRabim? So, I mean, nobody imagined in those days putting a dome over a stadium where 100,000 people are sitting under the dome, right? So now you've got the Sratyo Platya of the city underneath a roof, okay? Would that be a Rishus HaRabim? I mean, obviously, I'm not really talking about that case because it's completely included and would be Rishus HaYochid. But I'm saying that over here you could dome a city. So is that a Rishus HaRabim? So the question revolves around, when it comes to Rishus HaRabim, using the model of Rishus HaRabim, which is Klal Yisrael in the Midbar. And that would be where we would learn it from. So Amrav Shmuel Bar Yehuda, Amrav Abba, Amrav Huna, Amar Rav. Actually, if you are Mavir Arba Amas, Rishus HaRabim, that is covered, it is not a Rishus HaRabim, you would be Potter. Because in the Midbar, which is the place where we have the model Rishus HaRabim, it's Eino Dome Ledignei Midbar. Now, this gives us the most beautiful opportunity, which we haven't had the entire Masechet long. Remember that the whole concept of Shabbos is, again, based on the Melachos HaMishkan, right? So even if we're learning Eila HaDvarim, which introduces the concept of Shabbos together with, as if it's all one thing, these are the things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you to bring to the Mishkan, turns into, these are the things that you can't do on Shabbos. Quite remarkable. And over the past few pages, we've come to understand that that is fundamentally an interrelationship of the Mishkan to Hotzah, which is crazy, but not so crazy when you realize that that's the whole darn point of the Mishkan, for heaven's sakes. The Mishkan is about travel. The Mishkan is about a portable Mishkan. Every last aspect of it was built around the idea of how do we move things from place to place. Whoa. And once you realize that, it means that the closest that you get to understanding the relationship of Shabbos to Mishkan is Dafka in Hotzah. It's because of that, that once again, Hotzah becomes the key to our relating in a very intimate, detailed way, the elements of the Mishkan to Shabbos. And we've never done this before. I mean, we spoke about the idea of the Agalot of the Levim and how it is that they passed something from one Levi to another, and we had to analyze exactly the way they were parked. And we thought that was just like, you know, okay, fine. It happens to be that we got to figure out how they were parked. But that isn't the point. What we're going to discover today is that in order to understand how it solved the Mishkan, it's so brilliant that it mamish brings me to tears. It's just incredible. In order to understand Hotzah of the Mishkan, you need to understand how the Mishkan was built in the first place, in the most amazing way, which appears to be totally coincidental and is absolutely astonishing. Because it turns out that the specific details, every last detail of how the Mishkan was put together is central to understanding how the Mishkan moved. What? How is that possible? It's possible because it will define what is considered to be the Rishus HaRabim in the Midbar, you see. Because ultimately, what we're going to be discussing over here is the very agalot that we were talking about before, which allowed us to talk about somebody who passes something from one Levi to another. Okay, that was a gentle beginning. We are going to have to figure out how the Krashim of the Mishkan were stacked up on those trucks. In order to figure out how the Krashim were stacked up on the trucks, we're going to have to figure out what the exact dimensions of the Krashim were. And in order to do that, we're going to have to figure out how they fit together in the Mishkan, because that will define for us how we were capable of stacking them up over the wagons in such a way that would allow us space in the wagon for the following statement, okay? So it's going to turn out that we need to analyze the length of the curtains of the Mishkan, the shape of the Krashim of the Mishkan, the way in which the Adanim fit into the bottoms of the Krashim, and the Brichim, which stuck out from the Krashim. And since the Brichim, which were these rings or even long pipes, hollow pipes, that held the pieces that kept the Krashim up one against the other, since they would jut out from the side, they obviously are going to have an important impact on how we were able to stack the Krashim up on the Mishkan, on the Agalot, because you can't stack the Krashim on the side that's got these pieces of pipes sticking out or rings sticking out. So all of this ends up being absolutely essential to figuring out the simple question which Rav says. Now, the Omer Rav, Mishum Rabbi Chiya, you should know that the trucks in the Midbar, Tachtehem, Beinehem, Tzidehem, underneath these trucks, you have to understand that underneath these trucks, you would actually have a separate Rishus HaRabim, and because of that, it would all be Rishus HaRabim, whether it's under the trucks, or whether it's between them, or whether it's the area to the side, all of that is considered to be a Rishus HaRabim. Now, let's figure out what that is talking about. We're going to analyze later on. We won't get to this tomorrow. But this is really a people make this into a very difficult daf. It's a very, very simple daf. Let's just understand what's happening over here. We've got these wagons. The Gemara is going to show that these wagons were essentially open on the bottom because they were nothing but a frame, which then you would put the Krashim on. So the frame itself was 2.5 amos wide, and it was 5 amos long. Outside of the frame, you had the wheels plus the axles. The wheel and the axle on each side took off 1.25, 1.25, which gives you additional 2.5. Remember that the Krashim were 10 amot long. That's given in the pasuk. That means when you put a carriage down over this wagon, you're basically utilizing the 2.5 amma area for the middle of the carriage, and the rest of the carriage juts out on both sides. On one side, you're going to be jutting out over the side of the wheels, which was 1.25 amos, plus an additional 2.5 amos, which is between one wagon and the next in order to allow room for the Krashim. Same thing on the other side. So add it up. 2.5 amos, you've got pure carriage sticking out. Okay, on either side is 5 amos. 2.5 amos in the middle is 7.5. On each side, 1.25 area for axle and wheel is an additional 2.5, which gives you 10. Each of these wagons, remember, they're side by side. This is the way that we put the Krashim up. Now, what Rav is tying is something that seems to be a problem based on what we just said. Because what he's saying is that when you've got the Krashim stacked up on the wagons, under the wagon, which is now covered by Keresh, between the wagons, which is now covered by Keresh, I mean, I understand that they're very high, okay? But it's still covered by Keresh, isn't it? And he's claiming that whether you're in the area between the two wheels on either one of the sides, or you're underneath the wagon and it's passing over you, because remember, it was quite high, or you're between the two wagons and you've got the loads passing over you, which are high, you would be in a Rishus HaRabim and not a Rishus HaYachid, which doesn't make any sense, because Rav just said that if there's a cover to the Rishus HaRabim, that it's not considered to be Rishus HaRabim, because it's not similar to Diglei Midbar. And now he's saying, actually, even though it's covered, it would be Rishus HaRabim. Now, how do you understand that? Doesn't make sense. Sure it does. Kika Amar Rav. Rav didn't mean the entire area. Rav meant the area between the two stacks of krashim that you put on. So Bidarata, he was talking about the area between the darot, between the different piles that you had stacked up. Wait a minute. How exactly would that work? Okay, now before we get into these kind of details, I want to describe to you the entire situation so we can learn the daf in the next 3 minutes, and then we'll go through and do it inside. We know that the Mishkan was made utilizing 20 of these boards, and we had on one side, each one of the boards was 1.5 amos wide. 20 on the other side gives us 40. Then the Torah describes 6 on the side that was going opposite the opening. The opening was to the east, the two long sides were north and south, and the back of the Mishkan was to the west. Now, that's exactly like the Beis HaMikdash, okay? The proportions were also exactly like the Beis HaMikdash, because remember, everything was based around the way that the Mishkan was. Now, that means that the inside of the Mishkan was 20, the inside, please remember that, the inside of the Mishkan is 20 amos long by, let's try to figure it out, we've got 6 boards that are listed on the western side, each one of which was 1.5, so that gives us only 9. But there were 2 additional boards that were there to cover up the edges, which gives us 8 boards. Now, that would mean, if we just imagine straight boards, everything is very simple, it would mean that the back of the walls, the thickness of the walls on the north and south needed to be covered with something, right? Because it was square from the outside. So what we had was a total of 8 boards, which gives us 12 amot, which means that the additional 1 amma inside, the relationship there for the Mishkan would have been 30 long to 10 wide, plus 1 additional amma on each side to cover the thickness of the boards of that were coming from north and south. And that made a straight square on the outside, which was 1 amma bigger in each direction than the inside, because the walls over here, assuming that the krashim went up on one level, 1 amma, that would give us a very beautiful 30 by 10, which was then split in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. We put up the parochet, same exact interrelationship that we have between the Kodesh and Kodesh HaKadoshim in the Heichal of the Beis HaMikdash. We just multiply it depending on which binyan we're talking about. But the prorated remains the same. Now, the question was, we then covered over the Mishkan. We're going to see why this is important. We covered over the Mishkan, remember, in 2 levels that we're going to be talking about today. It's really 3 levels, but we're talking about what was called the Mishkan. The Mishkan were these beautiful linen vilonot, curtains, but they were, you know, used as the covering. Each one was 4 amos wide, and each one was 28 amos long. And the Torah said, sew 5 of them together and another 5 of them together, and then connect the 2 with these little beautiful golden buttons that you would be putting through these beautiful blue treles button holders, and that would keep it all together. And the Gemara is going to say later on, that looked like stars in a darkening sky, right? So each one of the golden pieces was like a little star, the treles around it, where it was space, because treles always supposed to represent the end of the atmosphere entering space, as the Gemara said elsewhere. Fine. Okay, so now analyze what those curtains did. Those curtains, if they were 28 amos, how wide was the entire area that they had to cover? They had to cover the 10 amos of the inside, One arm on either side of the actual thickness of the wall is 12. And we've only got a total of 28. And we've got the two sides to cover. Now, they're obviously not going to be able to cover the two sides, because if we add the additional 10 amot on either side, so then we've only got 28 out of the 32. What happened to the rest? So apparently what happens is that they only come up to 2 amot from the ground. 2 amot from the ground is interesting, because remember that the bottom part of each one of the krashim was actually hacked away to carefully create two pegs, so that those two pegs, they weren't just pegs, they were 1.5 amas they were half an amma out of the one amma, and between the two of them there were another amma out of the amma v'chetzi, but they fit directly into the two sockets that were called the adanim, and then the silver of the socket came up evenly against the thickness of the carriage. So that means the bottom amma, if you looked at it from the outside, was covered with silver. The next 9 ammas, all you could see was the wood. The krashim, after they were put together, you would put through a stick that would be there in order to hold them together. And that meant that there needed to be rings on the outside to hold these sticks in order that they wouldn't move back and forth, and that way you would have a solid wall on all sides. That's the simple understanding of it. Okay, that meant that if we only had 28 out of the 32, then we would need to leave, which is weird, we would need to leave not only the silver uncovered, which is understandable, but even one amma above the silver on either side would remain uncovered, because we only had 28. We're missing 4 ammas, 2 on either side, right? Now let's figure how much we have of these 10 pieces, each one of which was 4 amot wide, which we sewed together in groups of 5 and then connected the two groups of 5. That means we have a total of 10 times 4 of the widths that are now become the length of the Mishkan. Because now after putting them along their length across the Mishkan, we now have 4 times 10 along the Mishkan, correct? That's 40. Okay, what does that give us? Well, we had 30 on the inside. Then we have another amma on top from the keresh, the thickness of the wall, gives us 31. Leaves us 9 amot in the back, in which case we would have all the way the back covered until the silver. So it's not even. Interesting. So in the back, it would get up to the silver. All of this is very simple. The problem starts in our sugya. If you hold like the Mandi Amar, we'll see that at Simach Lokas, who says, well, things weren't that simple. Because the measurements that were given to the krashim in the Torah are only talking about the bottom of the krashim where they fitted into the sockets, which were called the adanim. But then they were actually made in a much more... We actually had Alon Rogoff was there, and he was working on planning this. He didn't think a boxy kind of Mishkan was what we wanted. We wanted something a little bit fancier than that. So what happened was that each one of these krashim was shaved away, so that it gradually tapered to the roof, so that the Mishkan looked really classy. So when you're looking at it from the front, you didn't see a box-like structure. It actually went up so that by the time the Keresh touched the top of the Mishkan, it wasn't an amma thick, it was only one single etzba thick, which of course gave a very beautiful kind of look to it, right? So it went up a little bit to the side, much more like a tent, which you would expect a tent instead of being boxy would be tenty. Okay, now if that's the case, obviously it gives us a lot more room as we stack them up. It gives us a lot more room between pieces, because realize we can't stack them up on their long side. We have to stack them up weirdly on their thinner side. Why do we have to stack them up on their thinner side? Because we've got all of these things sticking out on the long side, which were there in order to hold the poles that were put between them that kept them all even, right? So those rings, or even according to other Mefarshim, they were even more than the rings. They were like half pipe affairs that were sticking out, prevented us from having them lying one on the other in the width. We had to have them lying one on the other in the thickness, okay? If you hold that these krashim were actually planed away until they came to one etzpa, so then you would have a lot of room between the two planes, as we'll see. And that would explain Rav, which is what we're going to do. The problem is that that gives us a completely different understanding of how the Uriot of the Mishkan fit, right? Because we thought it was all very simple because we took off an Amma because of the thickness of the wall. Now it turns out that the top of the wall was not an Amma. It was only one etzba. So now what we have to do, in order to decide how much of the side and back of the Mishkan was covered by the Uriot, what we need to really do in practical terms is to add one etzba instead of one Amma on each side. Then we have to solve for the Pythagorean theorem by pretending that what we have is a right triangle whose base is one Amma, which was the thickness of the Keresh, and we'll pretend it comes up to a sharp point on top, so it's a real triangle, and then we'll figure out, okay, how much extra does the diagonal end add as it comes down to the bottom? Now, it turns out that that gives us a total. The solving for Pythagoras gives us an additional 1.5, approximately, etzbaot. One etzba on top gives us 2.5 etzbaot on either side. To keep things simple, we're going to ignore that because it's not a significant part of the Amma. Okay, so we'll pretend that it comes to a sharp, no space at all edge up on the roof, and that there is no diagonal, just to keep things easy. All right. So now, yes, sorry, not a right triangle, an isosceles triangle. Okay. So now what we have is much simpler on one hand, but now we can't figure out where what we did with all that material. So what happens now is, if we've got the 28 amot, now the 28 amot, we're going to actually be able to cover the entire inside of the Mishkan, which is 10, and we're going to still be able to have 18 left, which gives us 9 on each side. Ah, perfect. Now it gets right up to the silver. Good. How about the back? Aha, the back gets all the way to the ground, right? Because now we get that extra Amma that we thought was keeping it up above the silver level. Now it hits the ground, except for the 2.5. Okay, forget about that. Now, let us consider, so far so good, but remember that there was another layer of covering above the covering of the Mishkan, which was called the Ohel, La Ahel Al HaMishkan. Now that part was made out of the Uriot Izim. And that was different. First of all, there were 11 Uriot Izim, not 10. And there were two sets, one of 5 and one of 6. And the additional one was draped over halfway over the front of the Mishkan, as it says openly in the Pasuk. So we want to have two of the 4 amot of the thickness coming down in front to give sort of a shaded effect on the front. We're going to compare this to a Kala who walks around with a little bit of a veil over her face. The Mishkan, remember, Biyom Kalot Moshe Livnot Eta Mishkan. The Mishkan is like a Kala. And okay, great. But that means that now in the length, we're going to be adding an additional 2 amot. Whoa. And in the width, the Torah added an additional 2 amot too, because these are 30 long. And even though they're only 4 wide, which was the same as the other ones, but there's 11 of them instead of 10 of them. So that gives us 2 additional amot to cover the sides and 2 additional amot to cover the back, because only 2 out of the 4 were bent down over the front of the Mishkan. It says chetzi, only take 2 to put in the front of the Mishkan. So what happens now? Well, now, according to this shita, if before we had the silver uncovered, at this point the silver gets completely covered. But according to this shita, that it came up to nothing on top, we already had the silver covered, which would mean that now with these, you would have 2 amot that would be on the ground. They wouldn't even be on the sides of the Mishkan. Now, it's interesting that the Torah does say that. It says that the chatzi Yiriyah would be Saruach on the Achorei HaMishkan. Saruach actually seems to mean that it would be dragging along. What would be the point of dragging along? So again, as the Gemara says, well, you know, when the Kala is going down to the Chuppah, she's got a train, right? You got all the kids holding up the train, so the Mishkan had to have a train also. So now it's got this little veil in front, it's got a train in the back, and as it's traveling, so to speak, it looks like it's a Kala walking to the Chuppah at all times. It's just very beautiful. As far as the sides are concerned, well, we now have an additional Am on either side, which brings us down to the ground on both sides. According to the other Shita, we don't have an additional getting to the ground, because remember, we have that additional Am on top for the roof, but we finally get down to the silver. So now we can see the shoes, the silver shoes, as the Kala walks down to the Chuppah, so to speak. Okay. The difference that this makes is in terms of the stacking effect, and the stacks, therefore, will allow us to explain how Rav gets away with saying that there was an area without roofing, the roofing being the actual crushim as they were piled. This is the entire daf, and allows us to understand how we got into the building of the whole Mishkan just by needing to figure out the Maimer of Rav as to what the Rishus HaRabim in the Mishkan, in the Midbar, consisted of. So it's absolutely amazing. So now let's just go through it in the Gemara, because it's really very simple. Okay, so now, says the Gemara, think about this. How long was the Agala? Each Agala, we're going to show this later on tomorrow, was 5 amot long. Okay, how exactly was the, what was the width of a keresh? I mean, I'm assuming, without thinking about it, that it would be lying on its wide side so that it would be, you know, much more solid. Okay, so that would give us an amma and a half. So how many stacks could you put? Well, 3 times an amma and a half would, I mean, obviously we want to stack it as low as possible so it shouldn't fall and shouldn't shake. So we would make 3 stacks, 3 times 1.5 gives us actually only 1/2 of an amma left, right? Because we would have 4.5 ammas covered by the 3 stacks of 1.5. We've already seen all this is wrong, but this is our first assumption. So then we would have 2 gaps between these 3 piles, and that would give us between each one of these gaps only 1/4 of an amma, which of course is loved. What good is 1/4 of an amma? You need to have more than 3 tvachim, and therefore Rav still doesn't make any sense because it's completely roofed over, and Rav is now claiming that under the roofed over area you would still be able to be chayiv, but Rav holds you're not chayiv. Ah, you're wrong. What did you think, that we stacked up these krashim on their wide side, meaning 1.5? There's no way to stack them up on the wide side, because then you'd be getting into the problem of what you would do with the rings that were sticking out. You would have to put them on their narrow side, which is a little weird, but there's no choice. So they were achudan monachlo. Okay, fine, says the Gemara. Okay, even so, let's figure it out. Sof, bottom line, how much was the thickness of the thin side? Okay, 1 amma. Now, how many piles would you put of 1 amma on a 5 amma long wagon? Obviously 4, to get them as spread out as you could. But that means that you're left with 1 amma that you're going to be splitting between 3 gaps now, because you have 4 piles. And that leaves you, again, no room that isn't lovud between them. So we still don't have any way of understanding Rav. So doesn't make sense. It's kalavadami. Again, we're talking about lavud. Ah, you forgot. According to the Mandi Amar, who says that the krashim were only 1 amma at the bottom, but on top they were very, very thin, and they were only 1 etzba thick at the top. So basically we can view them as triangles, right? Everything works out fine. Why? Because then, and now we're taking for granted that we would not stack the krashim head to toe. That's your first reaction, to stack them head to toe. That way you fit in more, and they're going to be tighter. But we wouldn't do that for 2 reasons. First of all, it's not very nice. Remember that we view the krashim, every keresh had its own particular place. What are you going to put, toe to head? It's not nice, right? So because of that, just like you wouldn't want to sleep toe to head, you don't want the krashim to be toe to head. It's indignant. It's undignified. Okay. Furthermore, Mishkan, as Rabbeinu Tam points out, it's very inconvenient. Because if you're taking apart the Mishkan, you don't want to start flipping things in another direction. These things weigh a ton. You're just taking them down, you're passing them on. So they want it to be as efficient as possible, and therefore that was stacked on one on the other in that shape, in that thin shape. Okay, so then you had plenty of room between the gaps. That was not lavud. But if you hold that if they were an amma on the bottom, they were an amma on the top, we don't have any way of understanding it. Answers the Gemara, Omer of Kana, it still works out. Because this is big differences among the Rishonim to understand this. Rashi learns ba'at be'e. Ba'at be'e means like clips. Clips means like a paper clip. How did they make a paper clip in those days? A piece of wood with a thin slit in it that then you would fit the paper in and it would hold the paper together. The same thing is true over here. What we wanted to do is we put the krashim back to back so that they would be able to support each other as if they were clipped together in a clip on top on the thin edge. And that would enable them to be much more solidly placed instead of having these ridiculous separate piles. So what we did is we put the krashim, we put them back to back, and they were not bottom to top, back to back, facing one of the areas with the rings was facing in, one of the areas with the rings would be facing out in the other clip. And that way you had lots of area between the two. You had four stacks, but since they were up against each other, you still had an amma between them because you had, even if you all they were flat, they were two, and one amma in between that did not need to be split between the others. And that was what Rav was talking about. Wait a minute. But the clips were on the wagon. I mean, they were on the top of a wagon. Now, for heaven's sakes, don't wagons have bottoms? I mean, isn't the wagon itself going to cover over the area? Agala gufa mikorahave. I mean, understand how this explains between the wheels. How does it explain under the wagon? You claim that was also according to Rav versus Sarabim. How could Rav have possibly said such a thing? No, actually, you're wrong. They did not have a bottom. Why would we make a bottom? All that we had was a frame that was held together in a couple of places by the equivalent of yitedot. A big board held together the frame. And we didn't need to have a bottom because the krashim were much larger than the agala. Tana Rabbana. Let's talk about this machlokas that we just mentioned a moment ago. Krashim milamata novian ama, but on top they were ad ke'etzba, kalin volchin, because it says yu tamim al rosho. They should be tamim. What does tamim mean? Well, when we describe the water of the Yarden, when we were crossing the Yarden, it says tamu nichratu. The waters came to an end. And we use the word tamu, it means come to an end. Tam v'nishlam. So if that's the case, it means that they ended. Like the water would have gradually tapered out. So that means that the boards tapered out as they came up to the top, milamala. So says Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Nechemiah says, no. They were an arm on the bottom. They were an arm on the top. It says yachtov. It doesn't say, it says yachtov you tabim arosho. So yachtov would mean that it was the same, all the same. But I mean, it does say tamim. No, says Rabbi Nechemiah, tamim means don't use plywood. It means use a one natural board. You can't put these boards together and glue them together and have thicker boards. No. These were the boards that Yaakov Avinu planted as trees hundreds of years before. They were one solid board. That's what tamim means, like tam. The lolesu de nisra. Don't bring different pieces. And what about, according to Rabbi Yehuda, why does it say yachdav? No, yachdav means that you have to make sure that they're in alignment. That's all. They can't be one sticking out in one way, one sticking out in the other way. Now, so if you say that indeed they are the same bottom and top, so now I understand why it says that on the back of the Mishkan, which was the Yarkatea Mishkan, which was on the western side, Yama, make six krashim plus an additional two for the edges, okay? Of course, because the 6 covers 9 out of the 10 on the inside. You've now got a half an arm on either side that needs to be covered, but you also have the thickness of the wall that you have to cover that's coming from the north and south. So I need exactly 1 amma and a half on each side. 1 amma to cover the thickness of the wall. The other half an amma covers the area that was not covered by the 6 times 1.5, which equals 9 instead of 10, which was available in the Mishkan. That's great. Then you have Shnei Krashim Tasilim Ktsuot, and that's perfect. The Atiput Yidahani, so the width of the 2 boards in the corner, fills up precisely the open area plus the thickness of the amma, the sumche, of the other boards. But now, if you hold that we're talking about that they were only 1 amma at the bottom, and then they were tapered, okay, use your brains. What did this look like at the edge? It looked ridiculous. Hey, Alon, what's the matter? When you designed that, you weren't thinking of the back wall? What's with you, man? And now you're going to have these little pieces coming out in the back in the wrong direction, sticking out on either side like a couple of floppy ears with the Mishkan supposed to look like Dumbo the elephant? Answers the Gemara, well, obviously you'd have to shave it down in order for it to fit, and you'd have to shave down the other side in order that it wouldn't stick out. So it was like a mountain, you know. So this board was shaped a little bit funny. That's why the Torah calls them the corner boards. They were shaped differently. Okay, now, then there's this other amazing thing, because we had the brichim that were going from across them, and there were 5 brichim. We had 2, 2, that's 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1 on the top half, another one on the other part of the top half, same thing on the bottom, gives us 4, and in the middle, you had 1 long one that held the whole thing together. But the Gemara doesn't hold that. The Gemara, that's the way Rashi explains it, because he was going, as Tosis points out, according to the Braisa Malachas HaMishkan. But the Gemara holds that the Briach HaTichon was actually drilled through the Krashim inside, did not go on the outside, and it was magic. Because as you fed in the Briach HaTichon, it bent when it got to the back wall, and then bent when it came, boy, the plumbers would love this one, let me tell you. So it bent when it came to the back wall, moved all around, and then went up through all the other side, and that really magically gave the Mishkan 1 solid piece of a Briach HaTichon, and that, of course, was a neis, b'neis haya omed, fine. So that would be the difference. Now, figuring out precisely where it is that the Yiriot HaMishkan would go, okay, let's take a look at that. Et HaMishkan taseh 10 Yiriot, orech ha-yirachat 28 ba'ama, 28 amas long, and okay, now let's take those 28 amas, okay? Put the 28 amas over the width of the Mishkan on top, all right? Okay, each one was what? 28. You've got 10 amas for the inside of the Mishkan, take off 10. Okay, leaves you now 18, 9 on this side, Teshel Hagis, and 9 on the other side. Now, according to Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that effectively we're going to ignore the thickness of the board on top because there was no thickness, the Etzbar will ignore. So now, according to him, things work out because now you've got 9 on either side, which exactly leaves you the silver at the bottom exposed, and that leaves you the Amma Adanim. According to Reb Nechemiah, well, you got to take off an extra Amma on either side because it was thick on top. So then you're left off with 1 Amma less on each side. So not only is the silver exposed, so is the Amma above the silver exposed. Okay, great. Now let's take a look at how it went along to the back. Okay, now let's combine all of the different widths across the entire length of the Mishkan. Okay, we've got 10 times 4. Gives us 40, because we've got 10 of these little panels. Okay, 30 of it goes to the inside of the Mishkan. You've got 10 left. Again, according to Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that there was nothing because we're ignoring the Etzba, so then gives us 9 coming down the back, and so according to this, rather, we've got 10 coming down the back. We cover everything, even the Amma of the Adanim. According to Rabbi Nechemiah, who says that we got to take off an extra 1. We only have 9 left on the back. So then, fine. So now we've got, according to him, only the silver on the back. Okay. Now we've got another group. We've got Yiriot Izim. These are the goat Yiriot. And each one of these was 30 amas long instead of 28. And there were 11 of them. Okay, let's first take the 30. Take the 30, put it over the Mishkan that is now covered with the first Yiriyot that were made out of linen. Okay, what do you got? 30. You've got the 10 of the roof. Okay, you're left with 20. Gives you 10 on each side. According to Rabbi Yehuda, that completely covers the wall because he pretends there's no thickness at all to the wall on the top, and we don't have to worry about the diagonal. So we've got 10 to go, and that covers us all the way to the floor, which gives us the Amah Da'adonim being covered. According to Reb Nechemia, we got to take off one Amah on either side because it was thick on top. So now we've got the silver exposed. Now let's talk about the length. Okay, so we've got 11 of these. There are four, but remember that it says Beferish that the extra, the Amah Mizeh, the Amah, by the way, I mean, it says the extra Amah of the sheep, of the Izim skins, the goat skins, it says, but Odev, there are lechasot. Lechasot what? Lechasot the Amah shel Adonim. According to Rabbi Yehuda, that would be the point. And according to Rabbi Nechemia, it would be lechasot up to the Adonim. So it would be covering the wood, the extra amount of wood that was exposed, up till the Adonim. So with lechasot Amah shel Krashim. Now let's take along, let's take the combined 11 times 4. Okay. That gives us 44. Kamavi arba imva arba. Take off 30 for the actual inside. Okay, so you are now left with 14. Now, the Torah said specifically to use two of the extra piece and to fold it over the chafalta tayiriya shishita mupnei amenorah. That means that we've only got 12 instead of 14. According to Rabbi Yehuda, that's great because according to him, we now anyway were covering the silver. So now we've got a chatzia yiriyahu defa tisrach. It should be draping over the ground. But according to Rabbi Nechemia, you only have one amah that's going to be draping. Why does it say the use chatzi hayiriyah to be draping? To be draping doesn't mean on the ground, says Rabbi Nechemia. To be draping means drape beyond the other one. That's all it means. Tisrach michavroteha. Okay. Tana Devei Rabbi Yishmael. So what do you think the Mishkan looked like as it was walking down? It was like a woman who's walking, a really fancy woman. She's walking down the street, and she's got this beautiful train that is trailing. And so to the Mishkan, put together the various midrashim. What we've got is the kala with the veil in front and the train in the back.